They turn for home. In the midst of biz, the leader, Bells, the one, is coming down the outside. Frank's Rocket is trying to squeeze through toward the inside. Estilo Talentoso is there as well. Frank's Rocket up the rail. Estilo Talentoso is there. And Bells, the one, on the outside. Club Car runs late down the extreme outside. Bells, the one, Club Car. Bells, the one, Club Car. Estilo Talentoso. Bells, the one, takes it by a neck.
It's been another week in racing. It's time to recap it. And who better to do it than Michael New Magic? Two bros slash pros who cover the highs and lows of racing around the globe on every one of their shows. Real fans look forward to these guys and their last thoughts, cause they know they're not talking out of their royal ascots. What they say makes sense. So ladies and gents, sit back and relax as Blinkers Off presents The Magic Mike Show, where you hear the experts speak. The Magic Mike Show. Tune into the show every week. The Magic Mike Show. You can trust the show is the bomb, because it's being brought to you by RacingDudes.com.
What's up, everybody? I'm Magic.
And I'm Mike.
And this is The Magic Mike Show, and I hate the NFL. Mr. Samich! Welcome to episode 317 of The Magic Mike Show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great because I'm not a Lions fan. How are you?
I hate everything. I hate everything.
I love the paper bag. I had no idea you were going full get up here. That was a really brutal way to lose. Not only was it the wrong, I love going for two there. Analytically, it was incorrect. I love going for two there. And then you make it. And I realize, like, at this point, I'm not actually worried about the 4% analytical mistake, because it's more around like, hey, you, like, your team is playing hard. You're overachieving. It's great. But then to just get shredded on the back end and lose like that is just brutal.
By Kirk Cousins. How did we get shredded by Kirk Cousins?
The Vikings are supposed to lose.
I don't understand that. And then I see, like, there's all the Vikings fans that are in horse racing Twitter. Apparently, everybody in horse racing Twitter is a Vikings fan. There was the guy that was celebrating that the Lions had scored the two-point conversion. And I'm like, did we not learn anything about the guy who had the ill-fated 16-team parlay on the $25 free bet? And he bet the Lions. Never, ever assume that anything is set with the Lions, except that they're going to disappoint you. Just terrible.
Yeah, I mean, putting your faith in Jared Goff, that's all you need to know.
Well, Mike, I'm going to take this off so it's not so crazy. We're going to go to you for a single cam. You had a best and a worst thing that's kind of the same. I smell a Sommelbaum rant coming.
Yeah, so let's first off, best thing I saw all weekend, Keeneland put on a show. They did a wonderful job getting big fields, competitive fields. You had monster payouts and get an $87,000 pick five. You had an $8,000 pick five that multiple Sommelbaum's players had that I just left the stinking four off in the first race, like on Sunday. So it's capable, good cards where you can get some good prices and you get some big time payouts. Love the races. I love Keeneland personally. Been there once. It was amazing. I would love to go back again at some point when we don't have this kind of, when I was there during COVID and during weather. And so all of that kind of dampened the mood a little bit, but I would love to go back when it's sunny and nice. But Keeneland's got to get their shit together too. I'm sorry, but like it's really frustrating when you have the same colored saddle cloths. First off, that just needs to stop. You need to go to the multiple colored saddle cloths. It's really hard to watch replays and try and figure out who got a terrible trip. Yeah, the turf pick three, also a great bet. I want to make sure I give Keeneland love, because you got to change the saddle cloths now, guys. You got to do it. It's so frustrating watching a race like the Breeders' Cup Futurity, which, by the way, in and itself is a complete chuck race because of the stinking track running at a mile and a 16th, and 75% of the field didn't have a chance to win after the first turn, right? I mean, like, it's just ridiculous. You have horses seven wide. You have a pack of five horses squeezing each other in the middle because they're all racing for a position at this distance that doesn't play well at this track. And it's your biggest freaking race the whole weekend. And it's just like, come on. And now I've watched that race, I don't know, 25 times. I still have no clue who had a bad trip because they're all wearing the same damn saddle cloth color. So it's impossible to, like, even take away what I want to take away from the race outside of I am really excited to bet against Rattle and Roll because half the field that was good had no chance. And it's just like, Keeneland, you're so awesome. You do so many things right. Can you just do this right too? A little bit longer in these stakes races. Go a mile and an eighth if you need to. Like, just give us some actual way to get in the turn, because there's nothing that I want to see less than 14 two-year-olds running less than a 16th of a mile into a turn on a speed-paving track around the inside, because you get shit like this that happens. And then they do it the next day on the turf. Two-year-olds going two turns for the first time. It's just like, ah! Anyway.
Yeah, it's just like it reminds me a little bit when I was younger. I used to race open wheel cars. And we had this issue where you get to like the big regional races where there's like kids with like, you know, coming from a shit ton of money and there's a lot of pressure and everything. There's lots of really good kids that you're racing against at these tracks. And the you go into that first turn and all these like 10, 12, 14-year-old kids in their races, their energy is so jacked up. Their adrenaline is so sky high. Everybody goes way too fast into the first turn and everybody slams on the brakes at the last second and they get slammed from behind. And it's like an 8-car pileup every time, every race. Kind of reminds me of what happens at Keeneland going in that first turn of those short runs.
And it's because it's all 2-year-olds that have won on the lead going 6 and 7 furlongs. It's just a recipe for a disaster. And it's just like, and again, personally, as a gambler, that race was really frustrating because it's really hard to be able to pick. Like, you are as much trying to figure out who's going to have a bad trip as you are who's going to have a good trip, how it's going to handle. I'm also biased because all my horses got completely squeezed in the first turn. I had no chance of winning the damn race after a 16th of a mile. But as I also am excited to, like I said, to bet against Rattle and Roll out of it. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, at some point in this, because you have no clue. Like, it's a complete chuck race. It's a complete chuck race. You draw a line through it for every single horse because you have no idea how good or bad they are, because, like, even the 13 Classic Causeway, who ran really well, had to clear 12 freaking horses to get there and then held on for third. So he was almost more impressive to me than Rattle and Roll was. It's just, it was very, very, very frustrating, like, just watching it. Again, still love Keeneland. Well, gonna bet you again this weekend. Don't worry. But like, can we just get the colored saddle cloths? I'll deal with this other shit. Just give me the colored saddle cloths.
Yep, I'm with you. I hate that because, and for not only the reason you mentioned, but I'm sitting here trying to write race recaps of what's happening, and I'm sitting this far from the screen because I'm trying to look at the silks of the jockeys, because not only are they using the same color saddle cloths, a lot of the cameras, not exactly 4K HD resolution, Mike, so I don't even know what the hell like colors I'm looking at sometimes. So between those two things, let's just get this smoothed out. I'm with you. Keeneland will be a lot better with those two fixes.
But don't worry, we have a camera that's flying across down the stretch on a rope now. We're glad we got that, but we can't get the colored saddle cloths.
It was definitely something that was sorely missed at the Breeders' Cup. Jason says, epic rant, well done. The best thing for me, it hasn't happened yet, because I want to hear from Papa Dude, who was at the OU Texas game on Saturday. Saturday is going to be the best thing I saw, because between college football, horse racing, the damn Fury Wilder fight that I completely forgot. I was half asleep when Jared was texting us about it. I saw the replay the next day. There's a lot of great shit that happened in the world of sports Saturday. So if you're a sports fan, Saturday was pretty great. That OU Texas game, I wanted to watch it because I knew it was a big deal for Aaron and his dad. And so I texted Aaron, not knowing what I think it was a little after 9 a.m. my time. The game's already kicked off. I didn't know that. I said, hey, what time is the game? Let me know what channel and I'll tune in. I want to support you. He says, they're down 14-0 2 minutes in. I was like, well, okay. Yeah. I'm going to skip it. I'm sorry that you're having a bad day with that. And I knew, just leave him alone. And then I see something on Twitter that the OU took the lead 48-41. And I was like, wait, they were down. At one point, they were down 3 touchdowns. So I turned the game on the last 6 minutes. That was some wild shit. That was one of my favorite things to see. So Papa Dude's rant / recap of the game and the experience on the Dudes Who Bet Sports podcast, which will be on here at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. Tune in for that. That's going to be an epic one. I can't wait.
Yeah, he's going to rant pretty good. I got to say, I was pretty frustrated by that game. I was texting Aaron before kickoff, and Aaron's like, oh, we're going to lose. And Texas was catching 4. So I got Texas +4 and I'm sitting up 21 in the third quarter. Like, I already booked this mentally. And then you turn it back on and they're tied. And Oklahoma's in like easy field goal range with like 40 seconds left. Texas doesn't have a timeout. I'm like, great. Texas, Oklahoma wins by 3. Aaron's happy. I cash my bet. We're all good. And then they can't freaking tackle the running back. He's like, I'm just like,
what happened on that play?
Is that a worse loss, or was it when Baltimore beat Kansas City and that busted my parlay on the money line? Those two are like epic sports bad beats, and they happen within 2 weeks of each other in football. It's just ridiculous, man. Anyway,
worst defensive performance was it? Sorry, go ahead.
I had one other best thing that I saw on Twitter, and I'm going to try and find the actual video from it because it was really cool. So one of the Texas A&M media people took a video of the family of the kicker, Sam, I think it was Seth Smith, who hit the winning field goal. And I just want to find like anyone. Here it is. Okay. Cam Worthy is her name. Seth Small kicked the game winning field goal. And I'll retweet it right now on Twitter for anyone who wants to see it. And instead of 99% of the cameras are all on this kick, right? The other 1% was like this girl who's in the media department in Texas A&M thought to film the family. And it is amazing to watch the mother and the girlfriend all just like lose their mind after he makes this field goal. Really cool angle. And like one of those really smart journalism decisions. Because if worst case scenario, no one ever sees the video, right? Best case scenario, you get to capture this epic moment from a completely different perspective that no one else has. So I thought that was really cool too. Gotta love college football, man.
That is really cool. So make sure you go over to twitter.com/someofthem18, number 8. He retweeted that, so you can check that. I know I'm going to check that out later. I didn't hear about that. But, again, make sure you tune into the Dudes Who Bet Sports podcast later or download it. Listen tomorrow because I promise you Papa Dude's discussion on that game alone will be worth it. And Aaron, too. Aaron was across the country in New York. I'm sure all the highs and lows, he would have, at least at the end of the game, would have loved to be there. I don't know if before the finale he would have wanted, felt very comfortable being there. But anyways, Mike, we've got a lot to talk about. The last weekend of the Breeders' Cup preps happened this past weekend between Keeneland and Belmont. So if you watched last week's recap show, same format. We're going to go through division by division, talk about the races that were affecting those divisions, and give you our early thoughts. And also show you what Aaron Haltom is looking like over at racenews.com. So, Mike, without further ado, riders up. I guess we should first start with an apology to Kevin and everybody else because I finally trailed Mike Somich's football picks, and this was his first not awesome weekend. So we'll talk about that at the end of the show, Kevin. My apologies for the bad luck on that. Mike, the early 2021 Breeders' Cup predictions are here.
I do love Kevin's early comments from earlier, though. Giving some shade to Belmont because Belmont can't – like they couldn't time a snail race at this point properly. It is so damn ridiculous.
What the hell was that?
You got to give some props to Keeneland for at least being able to time a race because at this point, you cannot trust a single fraction to Belmont Post, which is wildly frustrating when you want to understand how fast they're going on the turf.
Especially if you're a speed figure maker. I know the speed figure guys were like, we're just hand timing everything ourselves. Yeah. We can't even trust what Belmont posts. Anyways, over here, first of all, this was from last week, Mike, but I feel like this is just a valid question this week as it was last. Regarding the Breeders' Cup as a whole, are we facing a big chalk fest at Del Mar?
Well, probably. I mean, it is starting to look more and more like it's going to be tough to beat some of these horses because in the divisions where it's like, oh, there wasn't a clear leader. Well, there's a clear leader now. And so it's going to be interesting to see who you decide to beat because that's going to be the key, right? You got to try and pick a couple of these favorites that you're going to try and fade and beat them. And it's, man, like Golden Pal's one that I would love to try and beat, but he looked pretty darn good over the weekend. And so you have these horses where you're like, oh, okay, where am I going to come up with my fades? Because at this point, you could see, you know, an average win payout, sub $8, sub $7, which is really low for the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, I think this is going to be one of those times where kind of like how the big days have been going mostly this year, right? We'll probably see the continuation where it's going to be a lot of chalk and you really have to press your big opinions pretty heavily and then find the spots where you think that there's a spot to a race where there's going to be a big opportunity for price. So hopefully when we go through this show, we can bring that up. But I agree. It's looking very chalky. We'll see how we pick our spots. Starting with the Classic, Mike, we didn't have any preps this weekend for the Classic officially. We do understand a clearer picture of who's coming into this. Rather than discuss for the umpteenth time our early thoughts on the Classic, are there any horses that are contenders at least odds-wise, that you think are going to end up scratching out of this? Like, we're probably not going to see them, then they're going to retire, call it early, because I have a very small but scared feeling this horse right here, Central Quality, might not make it to the Classic. It's just a bad feeling I have. I hope I'm wrong.
I think Essential Quality and Medina Spirit both could be put in that boat, where I wouldn't hold my breath if they're both in the field. And that's, like, if Medina Spirit scratches out, then I mean, Nick's Go should be a heavy, heavy favorite at that point. So it's going to be tough. But I'm a little worried that we're not going to see either Essential Quality or Medina Spirit in that race.
Yeah, well, Medina for a bunch of reasons. One, with the trainer. Well, they're all around the trainer, honestly. That's the big thing there. Hey, look who showed up. Listen, Season, you weren't here last week when Maxfield lost. You can't show up this week when he hasn't just lost the past week and expect to be shouted on the show. Get out of here. I'm just kidding. Let's take a look at the Longines turf here next. Mike, sorry, my mic got a little hot there. The reason I want to talk about this is Tarnawa's Aaron's pick. I don't think that's going to change, despite the fact that in the Grade 1 $500,000 Joe Hirsch Turf Classic, somehow, by the grace of God and all that is mighty, Rock Emperor gets a grade one win. But if everybody's watching Keeneland and nobody sees it happen, Mike, did it really happen?
Yeah, it did, because it busted my pick fives. It was like the only race I lost on freaking that day from Belmont. So yeah, it was a little frustrating.
Hang on, you didn't play Rock Emperor?
No, at 15-1. It's a Chad Brown exact and a grade one at Belmont. 15-1 over 14-1. How freaking crazy is that? Also, I've got some fighting words. Well, I'm not actually fighting words. Japan needs to get a good damn ride at some point here. Like, this has been ridiculous how bad the rides that Japan has gotten. Like, and we talk about this. I remember specifically talking about this. And I don't want to like pile on Ricardo Santana because he's actually done a lot better in the last year than he was a couple years ago when I piled on him for how he rode at Belmont. You can tell when these guys haven't ridden at Belmont before. I mean, some of the moves that they made, these early rushes, and then like you have Rock Emperor just sweep the field because he's the only jockey that pushed the button at the right time. It's like I was watching Fast and the Furious and some dude hit the Nas too early. And then you just see someone fly right by him at the wire. That's pretty much what this race looked like. Everyone went too early, and it's because Gufo went. And so when Gufo went, then Japan tried to go but couldn't make the hole. So then he had to circle around, but then he used too much horse, and all of a sudden Rock Emperor just rolls down the middle. And it's just like wildly frustrating. Just wildly frustrating.
It sounds like out of that race and his performance, Gufo is no longer a lock to go to the Breeders' Cup turf, which I'm sad about just because I really don't like that horse that I was hoping to try and beat him here. Sorry, my computer is still going screwy over here. Let's talk about the Longines distaff here, Mike. The big race from this past weekend, there were two of them, but we had the grade two, $250,000 Beldame Sunday at Belmont. Royal Flag wins with a 99 buyer, but Latruska just keeps winning and winning and winning. It's a 101 buyer for winning the Spinster, a grade one race, $500,000. But you see here, Aaron doesn't have Latruska picked. He's picked Private Mission. That's actually my pick to try and upset Latruska. I'm wondering, Mike, are we starting to see some chinks in her armor? Because she didn't look as dominating in the Spinster as she had in the previous races. And I'm wondering if the personal ensign and that really hard battle, that just might have taken too much out of her at this point.
I mean, I'm almost insulted by the fact that he said starting to see. I mean, I've been trying to fade this horse for like 3 weeks now on the show. Latruska is the one horse I'm definitely going to be playing against. I'm probably not going to use her in anything, especially if any other speed shows up. And I think the fact that you have some Bafferts in here that are going to be more forwardly placed that Latruska has not run into yet will make her much more vulnerable. You saw Bonnie South almost get her in Saratoga. You saw Bonnie South almost get her when she had everything her own way this last time at Keeneland as well. I think you're going to have a couple horses coming from off the pace that will be awfully dangerous to her on Breeders' Cup Day. So to me, Latruska is one of those. And I've been saying this for weeks since the Saratoga race. She would have lost that race if a couple horses behind her got better trips. To me, Latruska is the horse that you're trying to beat here, especially if you're getting anything sub 2-1.
Nick Feldman brings up She Dares the Devil, the only horse with a chance versus Latruska. She has won at Del Mar before. She won the Clement Hirsch earlier this year, so that's a big key. She also beat Latruska in the not the Apple Blossom. What's the one before? The Azari? I know she beat her. The only time Latruska's lost all year was to She Dares the Devil. And it's Brad Cox, and now you don't have Monomoy Girl, so she's getting all the attention in the barn for this race. Do you consider She Dares the Devil as one of those horses who can challenge Latruska?
Yep, I do. I mean, I think, look, both Brad Cox runners will have a shot. I think Chad Brown has a shot with one in there. And you got to respect the Baffert horses. That race, to me, is one of the most competitive top-to-bottom races that we're going to see at the Breeders' Cup.
I'm real excited to see what Private Mission, what kind of price we get on her here, especially with Latruska getting another big win. She's definitely a fan favorite, and I think she's done nothing wrong. It's just in terms of betting, purely betting-wise, we're going to try and beat her. Looking at the turf mile, Mike, the one race that we had was the grade one $750,000 Keeneland turf mile. I did not have this correct. I was big on his stablemate, Ivar. God damn, I don't know what it is, Mike. Every time Ivar, I'm on, I'm off. It never seems to line up right. And this time his stablemate, who I almost used, looks like a freaking monster, gets a 103 buyer for winning this. Paulo Lobo is going to send Ivar in love to the turf mile. He's got Imperador going to the Breeders' Cup turf. So lots of options there. For me, Mo Forz is still my pick in this race. What about you?
I want to know. This is one of these turf divisions. I want to know who's coming over from overseas. To me, that's a huge part of it. By the way, Latruska right now plus 150 overseas. Who did you like in that race?
Private Mission.
Private Mission not on the board right now, but Malathat, the second choice at 4.5-1. And that's the horse we didn't even mention, who probably has a legit shot at her too. So right now for me, in these turf races, a lot of it depends on who's coming from overseas. I do believe Mo Forza is the best turf miler that we have here. But it's going to be tough for Mo Forza to be able to win. He did run exceptionally well, and he's consistently run well over this course. The home field advantage is definitely something that you got to think is worthwhile here. But you know, again, you look on the board, and Mo Fuerza not currently your favorite on the, well, maybe he is. No, I can't.
It's Palace Pier. Right,
Palace Pier has been the one who has been, but they don't have it on the board right now. So it'll be interesting to see what that ends up coming back. But yeah, to me, it's the Europeans in the U.S. I do think Mo Fuerza has the best shot. And I think your girl might actually have a legit shot here as well if she ends up in the mile.
Stormy! She's going to, yeah. And when she won the Grade 1 Matriarch, which is literally a mile turf race at Del Mar. So she did that after finishing second to Uni in the Breeders' Cup mile. So she literally just jumped right over to Del Mar and did that.
You always talk about how she likes firm turf, and she's going to get that 100% at Del Mar, most likely. It should be a very fast turf course. That should play toward the U.S. horses, specifically the ones with pace. She comes up, and she comes like top of mind right there, where she should get a nice trip, much like what she got in the 4-star David Saratoga.
From what I'm seeing for the overseas horses expected to come, Palace Pier is hopefully going to show up, which would be amazing. He's actually aiming for a race at Ascot on October 16th as his prep to possibly come over. But Charlie Appleby has a horse named Space Blues who could really do well at some damage at Del Mar. Poetic Flair is another Irish horse. Order of Australia could maybe come back over, but he wins the Breeders' Cup Mile over this track last year, Mike. He comes in as the favorite in the Keeneland Turf Mile, and he's dead last. And John Velasquez had no, he just said, I pressed go, and he had nothing. What the hell? What was that?
Look, that one race that he won is the outlier in my mind. Not all these others that he's lost since, right? Like that to me, and it pisses me off even more because I had the horse to finish second for a $5,000 pick four and would have hit the pick six. But other than that, I don't hate Order of Australia for any valid reason. Literally, that one race, he was a 99-1 in that race, ran a career best race, and has never touched that thing since. It's frustrating because it's just a wild outlier to what he normally is. And that's a grade two level horse, grade three level horse. But when you get these fields, it's tough. And again, the mile, that was another one where you had to work out your trip. And that 11 post did him absolutely no favors either.
Well, I want to bring up one point real quick. Season was bringing up that buyers don't really mean that much. When I bring them up in this, it's more just to kind of get a point of discussion going. If you watch, listen to the handicapping shows for Mike and I, this is a general explanation. Buyers for us is just one tool, just like a jockey is one tool. A trainer's stats going turf to dirt is one tool. So we don't put all the godlike status into a buyer figure like some shows do or any other speed figure. So I just wanted to clean that up. I see Nick is bringing up Blowout. That's going to target the filly mare Turf. She did win the Grade 1 First Lady Keeneland on Saturday. She gets a 102 buyer. I thought this was impressive. You and I were all over this because of the lone speed angle here. She didn't end up it wasn't a mile. So the thinking and what Nick is going off is maybe a mile's best for her. But now she's going to try filly mare Turf. Do you see her? At least she's a pace advantage, right? A pace factor in that race, I should say.
Well, I think that might be the reason why they're going there. Right. I mean, if you go to the mile on turf, you're going to have other pace influences. Right. And Blowout needs a lone lead to be successful. Flavian Pratt rides very well when she's on that lone lead. Right. And in this mindset, you're thinking, well, if we go to a longer distance, it's more likely we're going to get that slow pace. If we can make that race, turn that race into a 6-furlong sprint and we have a length lead on everybody and we've gone pretty slow, make them catch us, make them get the perfect trip. I already have my perfect trip. I'm sitting on the front. Right. So I can see why the thought process is, where do we have a better chance of being lone speed? And that is 100% in the filly mare turf, not the turf mile.
And the amount of speed that shows up along with Blowout potentially will, I think, directly determine if a lot of us like Warlike Goddess on top and how strong we feel about that along with the Europeans who come over. I did skip over the sprint here. I just want to bring up Nick's comment there. But we had two sprint races over the weekend that affect the Breeders' Cup. The Grade 2 Phoenix at Keeneland on Friday. Special Reserve wins that with the 101 buyer. Then the Grade 2 Vosburgh Saturday at Belmont, following C with the 100 buyer. Following C, Todd Pletcher sounds like he's not fully committed to going to Del Mar, but if he does, he might go to the dirt mile on that one, kind of up in the air. Jackie's Warrior is Aaron's pick. I know that seems like a very logical single here. What do you think about the sprint right now?
Yeah, I think that Jackie's Warrior is still the pick. Following C would be an interesting thorn in Jackie's Warrior's side if Following C was able to show the pace that he showed over the weekend at Belmont. I think the talk about buyers, I think that Baby Yoda is a hilarious one. You have 114 buyer that Baby Yoda gets, winning a 9 winners or 2 allowance. And then no one has come out of that race. I think one horse has run and didn't run well out of it. That was not a one. That's a false buyer. We talk about those all the time on here too. And the reason why I like buyers is because it's what the majority of people are using. Now, being able to tell when a buyer is accurate or inaccurate is just as important as using the tool. That was one of those where you saw the 114 for Baby Yoda. You're like, no, this is ridiculous. Come on, man. He's not that good. I was impressed with Falling Sea. But the sprint still goes through Jackie's worry at this point. Unless Life is Good is there, and then we can talk a little bit more. But yeah, to me, it's interesting. Special Reserve also ran a great race. And that horse has been one hell of a claim for the Maker Barn. Would have been nice if he won at 6.5. But that's another horse that's caught me. a lot of these horses, man, they owe me some money. I think this is going to be a fun race. It's going to be all whether or not someone can go with Jackie's Warrior, and how fast is Jackie's Warrior going to have to go. Because if he goes 43 flat, then we can see someone come from off the pace. But if he gets to go 22-44, this thing's over, right?
Yeah. I think so. I think especially the way Del Mar plays it, if you can get comfortable in the speed like that, it's pretty tough. We didn't have anything for the Dirt Mile from this past weekend. Life is Good still looks pretty strong as long as he ends up going that direction. We don't have to talk about that. The Turf Sprint, we have one. You brought it up actually earlier. The great $200,000 Woodford Stakes. Golden Pal wins it Saturday at Keeneland. Only gets an 88 buyer. He's going to go to the Breeders' Cup probably as the favorite in this race, no matter who shows up from Europe. Other than his one try over in Europe this year, he's been pretty much unstoppable. What do you think about Golden Pal, and do you still like a price like perhaps a Lieutenant Dan?
Well, first off, I did want to mention this. If you do like never mind. That's a different one. Okay. Yes, here's the thing. Like I thought that was Golden Pal's most impressive race to date. Like I thought he was beat turning for home. I thought the four was going to go right by. And I thought the six had a shot at catching him if he doesn't re-kick as much as he did. But man, he rebroke like a champ down the stretch. I'm surprised he only got an 88 buyer. It was much more visually impressive than what that number comes back. Like Extravagant Kid's legit turf sprinter too. The horse that ran second in that race. Mm-hmm. Very, very good. One overseas good. Like, so I kind of want to give Golden Pal a little more credit. I am still more skeptical on Golden Pal. I think he's going to face a tougher challenge in the Breeders' Cup. If Golden Pal is the favorite, I'm probably not playing Golden Pal. I think that's kind of where I'm at. If you see 2-1, 7-5, 6-5, that's a horse that I'm going to try and beat. And if I get beat by Golden Pal, I get beat by Golden Pal. Like I thought 3-5 over the weekend was a ridiculous price. I don't think that horse should have been 3-5 in that race. I fell on my sword there. I didn't use him in anything. He beat me. Happens. But I'd much rather be chucking a 3-5 favorite I don't like than defensively using it, because you're going to lose long-term if you defensively use those type of horses.
And to call back on that note to something that someone brought up very early in the chat very nicely, you did a great job on the Jason Beam podcast, which I agree with. That was one of the points that you brought up. So if you want to check that out, Jason Beam's podcast, Mike did a really excellent job explaining his handicapping strategies such as that. I want to say out of this race, never bet Firecrow to win a race. You literally saw that horse's heart break, and he's quit. And Tyler Gaffalione felt it and just was like, nope, he's done. Like, that horse is just – like, his will to run got destroyed live on air at Keeneland.
It was ridiculous what happened to that horse. I mean, like, you saw the guts get ripped out, and he immediately quit. But he's like, nope, goodbye. And I think Firecrow probably thought he was going to win the race, top of the stretch. And then you just kind of look over, and he was like, oh, shit. Like, there he goes. We're done.
Good try.
Yeah, like, I don't know how you come back from that if you're Firecrow. I mean, I just don't know how you come back. You need that horse now needs a confidence boost. Put that horse in like $100,000 listed stakes, let him roll, and then get him back in with the big boys.
A horse who probably got a nice confidence boost over the weekend after suffering a loss to Churchill Downs. Bell's the One wins the Grade 2 TCA Stakes Saturday at Keeneland. Her trainer, Neil Pessin, wants to know what else she needs to do to get your respect, Michael. She doesn't get enough respect, he believes. He wants to know, what more does she need to do? Aaron's pick right now is Bella Sophia to upset Gamine. I feel like we're all going to try and take a shot because she's going to be one of the shortest prices on the board. And frankly, we all hate her trainer. So we'll see what happens there. Bella Sophia, Bell's the One. I know that's a horse you've loved in the past.
Yeah, Bell's the One has gotten plenty of respect from me. I think she won for me at like 17-1 or something on opening day at Santa Anita last year. It's the day after Christmas, I think she won at a big price after getting a terrible trip on Breeders' Cup Day last year. Look, I tried to beat Gamine last year. I was a freaking idiot, man. And the problem is, if you want to try and beat Gamine, you're like, well, she needs the lead. She didn't need the lead last year against Serengeti Empress, who I think is probably as good. Last year's version of Serengeti Empress, probably as good as anyone in this field this year. She made her look silly last year. I think Gamine's just going to be. Sometimes you just got to swallow the chalk. And to me, it's like, again, it's you're either singling Gamine or you're not using Gamine. You really can't defensively use horses like that, because you have to be right when they're bad, and if you're not, then you have to be okay with losing your ticket.
Long-term negative EV is where Mike's going with that. A couple races involving the juveniles. We get to talk about, wrap things up here. Start with the TVG Juvenile Division. We had the Grade 1 Breeders' Futurity Saturday at Keeneland. Rattle and Roll gets an 81 buyer, upsets the race. Kenny McPeak burns us off the tickets for our pick four, Mike, if we were alive to that point. Interestingly enough, Kenny McPeak said afterwards, probably not going to go to the Breeders' Cup. He's looking Kentucky Jockey Club. He is thinking like Tis the Law's connections did a couple of years ago. Let's plan out the Kentucky Derby, the Breeders' Cup. We're probably not going to win. I think Kenny McPeak saw Corniche and was like, Kentucky Jockey Club's going to be a lot easier than that race. So I respect the decision. I think it's probably smart. You weren't touching Corniche. Is Corniche your pick here?
Right now, yeah. I mean, I also am interested to see who goes there. I mentioned Classic Causeway in the open. I think Classic Causeway is the horse you want out of this. I don't know what, like, Rattle and Roll, that's great, man. Like, that horse isn't very good. I'm sorry. No thanks. You look back at the races this horse run, like, it did nothing. And, yeah, I realize it did just – the horse kind of bolted around the turn two back at Saratoga. But, like, it wasn't even that good against Gunite and Brigadier General, who both obviously have come back and look good. But, like, I just – why are you getting excited about this horse? I just don't get it. I'm looking forward to betting against this horse because I just don't see the long-term upside. And like I said, this race was a freaking mess, like an absolute freaking mess. Long way of saying, you know, I actually like Corniche less Monday this week than I did last week, because I thought that Classic Causeway was good enough to cause trouble up front for Corniche after showing the speed to be able to get first to the turn from the 13 post and be able to hold on so well here too. Horse finished third. Every other speed just gave it up. So, you know, again, I don't want to take too much out of this race, but what I can take away from it is Classic Causeway has a ton of early speed and has some heart. And both of those things are key if you're trying to beat a horse like Corniche.
Classic Causeway, I'm glad you brought it up, as the only horse out of the this race that I would really want, like, next out, assuming he doesn't go to the Breeders' Cup. I think if he does, which Brian Lynch said isn't out of the question, he definitely could cause some damage. Looking right now, David Aragona has some mock morning lines drawn up, and Jack Christopher is actually the 2-1 favorite for winning the Champagne for Chad Brown. Corniche is 3-1. Classic Causeway is, this hasn't been updated yet, but was 8-1. Command Performance is that Todd Pletcher maiden, who finished second in the Champagne, who definitely was going to a horse that would love going two turns in a route of ground. He's 8-1 as well, which I find very intriguing. I think that horse could be very good. I don't know if he's good magic good to win it as a maiden, but I think he's got the talent to hit the board, definitely.
I have someone who I respect who put $1,000 down on that horse to win the Derby at 40 and 60-1. So, I mean, like, yeah. Yeah. So I respect his opinion. He's a smart dude, very good handicapper. So I just got to keep that in mind as well. The Stellar Tap we talked about was most likely a sprinter. I think that was definitely proven. I think Echo Zulu is too, who we're going to talk about. Well, I don't know if we're going to talk about her later, but she's one that I'm probably going to try and fade at the Breeders' Cup. Jack Christopher, I think, is a really interesting horse. It's by Munnings. Munnings not usually more of a sprinting sire than two turn sire. So, like, I'm a little concerned about the distance.
And the Jack Dams family was all sprinting.
But Jack Christopher was the, like, one of the buzz horses of Saratoga. What I was told was going to win the Derby before he ever started. The Saratoga tips are just ridiculous. So don't take that any for like a grain of salt at all. He was supposed to be that good. He was that good in his debut. He was that good in his second time out. Like, so I think we got like a 102 buyer second out, and they adjusted it after getting the times adjusted at Belmont. So Jack Christopher is definitely the goods too. It's going to be a fun race. I mean, this is the other, you have a couple of these races where it's like there are four or five horses that should all be right around favoritism. And this is one of those spots where you can make a case for three horses that are probably have the right to be favored here.
Nick Feldman brings up that Todd Pletcher was recently on the Ron Flatter podcast, and he said Command Performance is the most excited horses that he has. That's two that he's excited about for the Derby. That's already run, but he has a few that haven't run yet. This is becoming more and more common that the really good ones, the Ferraris, they're kept in the shop, and it's very carefully planned out how they go. So we saw how well that worked with Justify, along with paying off the CHRB to ignore some drug tests. And so you see what happens with the Todd Pletcher 2-year-olds moving forward. Mike, we can talk about the turf, the juvenile turf division here. Tis the Bomb wins the Bourbon at Keeneland on Sunday. 74 buyer. I thought for, you know, the American Horses, one that came out of Kentucky Downs, looked very impressive there. Backed it up at Keeneland.
I think this horse, as far as Americans go, has a he's got an okay shot, but there wasn't anything that really wowed me here. I definitely am looking more at like Annapolis for Todd Pletcher. You brought up McKinnon for Doug O'Neill, who has won a couple stakes races out here. So I think at least the California horses might have something to say in this race.
Yeah, you know, I was all against the McPeak horse that won on Saturday. I was really impressed with Tis the Bomb winning on Sunday. This is like out of the 12 posts going, what was it, a mile and a 16th, right, on the turf? Out of the 12 posts going a mile and 16th, being hung, like, I think it was 4 wide, 3 wide on the 2 turns. This was a lot more impressive of a win than it looked. I used this horse as my last on the ticket, but I was like, you ain't winning from the 12 post here. And the horse is able to get it done. I thought it was a really impressive run. I have a little bit of interest in the horse that ran second, the Pratt Road, stolen base. He was way back early and was able to make a nice run, kind of weaving through traffic. Never really got stopped, but he did have to go, I think it was 9 wide or 10 wide at one point. So I'll be interested to see where Stolen Base shows up next and if I can get some type of price on him, because I thought that was a pretty impressive race too. With these 14 horse, 2-year-old fields, tight turns, like you got to watch the replay multiple times to figure out who tripped out, who didn't, and kind of where you want to play them back.
Annapolis is a strong contender. As far as the Euros coming over, it's still really hard to figure out. Charlie Appleby has a horse named Albar who won this summer that probably would come back. That was a win in Urine. Chad Brown's got Portfolio Company. They're really, I think, again, this is going to be a lot of Europeans possibly coming over, a lot of replay watching, especially if we're talking about Keeneland horses. And speaking of Keeneland horses, Mike, one that you and I thought very differently about raced in the Juvenile Fillies division, the Alcibiades Stakes. Juju's Map wins quite impressively, I thought. Only an 84 buyer, which kind of lends more to your opinion that you're going to try and beat Juju's Map. I would love to hear your opinion why a Brad Cox-trained 2-year-old that looked impressive in the last prep for the Breeders' Cup is a horse that you want to fade at the Breeders' Cup.
Well, this is... like, again, we're talking about a mile and 16th race and we've talked about this first finish line, inside, speed. She got all everything her way that day. Everything. Like, if Brad Cox could plot out a trip for Juju's, what is it? It's not Juju's Bean. What is it? Juju's Map.
Juju's Map. Yeah. It's close.
If he could plot out a trip for Juju's Map, that was the trip he would have plotted out. No trouble. Fairly easy sittings, like set in second behind what I would call not exactly a fast pace. Like they were a little quick out of the gate, but never really was having to use very much. The mile time in 136, they come home in 143, not that fast of a time, not that impressive of a race, never had to face any adversity. And oh, by the way, how good is this field? Like, is anyone else out of here?
That's someone a good question.
Have like any interest in the Breeders' Cup? So dream trip, perfect setup, beat nothing. And you're telling me you want this horse at a short price against the best 2-year-old fillies in the country?
I just don't think. I mean, you and I'm very much against Echo Zulu because I think she's a sprinter. We talked about how we think she's kind of Jackie's Warrior this year. And there isn't anyone other than Ain't Easy in California who has really wowed me. So for me, it's Ain't Easy and Juju's Map. And I don't – maybe there's a long shot that shows up that catches my interest. But as far as it goes, that's what I like.
Yeah, I would almost rather take the second place horse here, Distinctly Possible, than Juju's Map, which sounds silly because the horse got beat by 4 lengths. But that horse came from eighth, had a significantly worse trip, and had to be multiple wide on both turns. She wasn't able to switch leads in the stretch. This is a $600,000 curling out of that Chad Brown is training that should appreciate the extra distance. I think again, closers really have it. They're against their back is against the wall at this mile and 16th distance at Keeneland. So I would rather take a shot at a price with the second place horse than playing the winner as a favorite.
Right now, David Aragona has Echo Zulu as the 7-5 favorite in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. Only 3 horses are currently single digits. You could probably – Juju's Map will be the 4th one that he throws in there, I'm sure. But, it's interesting. There really isn't – there's not something a lot that's super exciting looking through this list here. I don't know. And let's see what happens. Hidden Connection, I think people are forgetting about her.
Yeah, right now Echo Zulu is a plus 175 overseas. Juju's Map is second choice, plus 250. Ain't Easy, the third choice, plus 450. Then Hidden Connection, plus 600. Averly Jane is on here at plus 700, who I think would be interesting. I expect that she's going to stay on the turf, but she'd be another one that I do think is interesting because she has had success on the dirt.
Well, let's talk about Averly Jane. That's actually the last division we have to go through. Nothing from the Juvenile Fillies turf division itself. The Juvenile Turf Sprint, we had three races, Mike. The Grade 3 Matron, Saturday at Belmont, Bubble Rocket with an 83 buyer. The Grade 3 Futurity, Sunday at Belmont, Slipstream with an 80 buyer and an absolute dream trip. And the $200,000 Indian Summer, Averly Jane, Sunday at Keeneland with an 86 buyer. And holy shit, did she look good.
Yeah, I mean, everything I had heard was this horse is better on turf than on dirt. And if that's true, she was very good on dirt. Like, so if she is better on turf than dirt, then holy crap, you got to watch out here. I thought Averly Jane ran really well in this spot. Again, I'm not sure what was in the field, but just the effort was impressive. Under control, under wraps the whole time. It's just one of those horses that you're really interested in seeing where she's going to be able to progress. She ran really well against the boys there, so I'm not really worried about her going against the boys again. And this is one of those where I think you'll get a little bit of a value. I mean, Averly Jane right now, 5-1 in the overseas markets. Your current favorite is Perfect Power, and then 3.5-1, and then Twilight Gleaming at 4.5-1, two international horses. So Averly Jane is one of those I think makes a ton of sense at 5-1. One Timer, I think, is interesting, who Aaron has here too. That's hopefully will be E.T. Barry's mount in the Juvenile Turf Sprint. Was able to go wire to wire over at Santa Anita opening weekend.
Sorry, I just had a really bad coughing attack out of nowhere. I heard everything you say. Yeah, I want E.T. Barry to show up for that too. Just the whole story about the journeyman leaving Arlington, the whole story, it'll be great. I think that Averly Jane is definitely going to be tough in this spot. But again, we got to see who shows up. Wesley Ward could have like 8 different horses he shows up for this race, right? And we're not even talking about some of them. So play to see, but definitely one to watch out for. And Wesley Ward is definitely somebody you got to watch out for. He's won the last two. This race has happened for 3 years and Wesley Ward's got 2. So I think that's where you start to look.
Yeah, I know. I agree. And like, I think you've got to respect Rosario and Clement, too, who's going to ship in here. Clement has had some wonderful, wonderful turf horses, especially turf sprinters that were up at Saratoga. Rosario is going to get his best mount, so I think that'll be interesting. One thing I do want to note, too, and I was able to get a couple prices at Belmont this weekend, so this is why I'm giving this out. Respect the mounts that Clement gives to Dylan Davis, because he is giving his best horses to Dylan Davis when Rosario hasn't been there. And people have not been respected. I think one got home at like 13-1. Another one got home at double digits over the weekend. The turf mounts that Clement is giving to Dylan Davis are the live Clement horses in those races. And you'll see some where it's like an Ortiz on the other one, but the live one is the one with Dylan Davis. So it's important to note that because they're not getting bad.
Interesting. That's really interesting. You said Dylan Davis. That was very not the name I expected to hear. But by the way, speaking of Nick Feldman brought up Slipstream. He wins the Futurity, which is 6 furlongs. Clement said he's going to the Juvenile Turf. So this horse is not going to be in the Turf Sprint. He's going to the Juvenile Turf. And Clement said that when he goes to California, he loves to prep his horses going 6-7 furlongs on the turf out in New York. So they go 2 turns on that faster California ground. So he's an interesting one when we get to the Juvenile Turf. I'm glad Nick brought that up.
Yeah, and your boy, Run Curtis Run, almost got the job done wire to wire there, too.
Oh, my God. Oh, I had him bet across the board, and I'm sitting there screaming, and I'm like, I thought for sure he's going to get, like, third, because I thought he had a good pace advantage. And then he got in that duel, and I was like, well, shit, this is his first time trying turf. He's not going to – he folds on dirt when he does this against New York Breds. This is open company on turf.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Man, Eric Ancel rode his ass off. I love that. That was a great ride, I thought.
I was so close, man. It just goes back to like speed at Belmont on the turf. Those shorter races is so dominant. I mean, you got to be 6, even 7 furlongs. You got to be looking at the speed first and then figuring out, okay, what is the one horse if it collapses that can come from off the pace? But you can't be playing 3 or 4 closers in those races and tickets. That'll get you in trouble.
That's going to do it for the horse racing side of the Magic Mike Show. Thanks for joining us. Mike and I will be back on Wednesday at 5:30 Eastern, 2:30 Pacific, live here on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter to go through a pick 4 sequence. Things are quieting down a little bit, Mike, as we're getting building up to the Breeders' Cup. We still have a Grade 1 race at Keeneland, the Queen Elizabeth II. I don't know who to bet in that race because Rushing Fall retired. I have to figure that one out. But I do want to know, do you want to go to Keeneland? Do you want to go to Belmont? Do you have any idea where you'd like to go this weekend?
I haven't seen the cards at all. I mean, I like Keeneland, I like Belmont, I like Santa Anita. So we'll do a Magic's Choice this weekend. You can pick it.
Oh boy, do we do the 6.5 furlong down the hill state bred California Distaff handicap, or the Grade 1 $500,000 Queen Elizabeth II at Keeneland? Depends. Are they going to have the same color saddle cloths at Keeneland? Because that will determine
probably
it right there.
I think the Grade 1s have the same color, don't they? Isn't that how they do it?
Is that what the reason? I don't know. There's no stupid rhyme or reason to anything. It's all dumb.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's the Grade 1.
We'll figure it out.
The Breeders' Cup Futurity, the First Lady, The turf. Yeah, I saw the grade ones have the same color saddle cloths.
Nick says you should do a live show during Keeneland Wednesday races. Start earlier. Nick, it's funny you bring that up. We had a nice long meeting before this show with the Racing Dudes Brain Trust trying to figure out some new ideas for pivoting. And that could be something that we start doing. I don't know. We could do with Keeneland. I don't know. We'll talk it over, Mike. I don't know what your schedule is like, but not absolutely opposed to it.
No, I think it'd be fun. And I'm going to start doing, I'm teaming up with Equinedge to do a show on Thursday nights. So this week will be the first show at 9 p.m. Eastern, where me and Brady Klotz are going to do live race handicapping. So we're going to take an hour and just go over races as they go from some of the night tracks and then talk about the Thursday night football game as well.
Mike, I know that you had brought up the a horse that you were looking to play next out. We kind of do the stable him up segment. The horse that I was all excited about was Club Car, who came running real hard to finish second to Bell's the One. I thought trip-wise it was she kept running up on heels her first time in blinkers. I was like, second time off for this horse in blinkers. She's going to be great. I was all prepared to come on here with the whole thing about how I'm stabling her up. And then her trainer said after the race, we're going to send her to the farm. She's had a long season. So I got nothing for you. Sorry.
Yeah, I can't remember the day that this horse ran. It was really frustrating because I thought this horse was much the best, and it just didn't get the job done. It was at Keeneland. Was it? I think it was Sunday. Is that right?
Club Car? Yeah.
Oh, am I thinking of a different horse than you are? Oh, I'm talking about you. That I mentioned. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, you did. Yeah, you brought him up. We were talking. Shoot, now you're gonna make me.
It's Long Pants Required. He was on the one that I brought up. It was. It was the sixth race at Keeneland on Sunday. And here's the problem. This horse is 0 for 10 on turf. So I do have to take like a step back here. Someone commented that on Twitter. It was a very good catch. Like, it's like, okay, is the horse really that good on turf? Did they make their own bad trip? But this specific case was a train wreck of a trip. The horse was loaded on the inside. And at Keeneland's turf, you couldn't make up a lot of ground in the stretch. You had to have your momentum going and be able to push forward. And Long Pants Required just never was able to get out. And he got beat to the spot by the horse that eventually won, then had to swing three wide out. If you watch back through Keeneland's six, I mean, the horse had a terrible trip. So it's a better race than what you're going to see on paper. But depending where we see Long Pants Required back, I'm not sure if you want to play him out, if that makes sense. I think it's more spot dependent and price dependent. But that race is definitely better than what you saw on paper.
I remember afterwards you were very bullish on the horse. I remember thinking he had a good chance to win that race too. So didn't work out for you. That will do it for the horse racing side. We'll see you on Thursday if that's all you're here for. We got some Monday Night Football action. Mike, I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on the new Indianapolis Colts versus the old Baltimore Colts versus the new Baltimore Colts. Where do you see things going with this game?
Yeah, we'll start with the six-pack. We went 4-2 this weekend. Took a little bit of an aggressive stance on a parlay, and that didn't pay off. It would have been nice if it had. But, you know, it was pretty happy with how it came out. And that Alabama game was just brutal. So that's the first losing week of the season, but hopefully we can get it back next week. As for tonight's game.
Sorry, everybody.
As for tonight's game, the line just moved to 7.5, or recently today moved to 7.5. It's been sitting at 7 the whole time. I think the Ravens were the play at 7, at 7.5. I'm a little more sketchy. If you wanted to have a single bet, get some action tonight, I would lean toward taking the Ravens and the under in a teaser. You can tease it down to 1.5 points and then tease the total under. Right now we're sitting at 46. So you can get that up to 52.5. So I would take the Ravens and the under as a teaser if you want to have some in-game action. I think that the Colts defense is not very good. I think the Ravens are going to be able to move the football. If you want to play some overs on some Ravens players like Marquise Brown, I think that's definitely worthwhile. Anytime touchdown, either Marquise Brown or their tight end. I think both of those are solid plays as well. So to me, it's loading up on Baltimore offense. I do think that they're the ones that are going to score the majority of the points, but I don't see them playing a fast game here. I think they want to try and get out of here as unscathed as possible from an injury front, specifically because Lamar's still a little banged up. So at 7, I like, if you want to buy it down to 7 and play the Ravens, I think that's worth it. Or if you want to go with the teaser and play the Ravens in the under, I think that's worth it.
How much stock do you put into a team after 4 weeks in, the Colts finally get their first win, and now they have to go on the road to Baltimore for Monday Night Football, so big spotlight. It's a team that just got that first win. Do you, as a better with a team, an organization like that, with the way they're at, are you worried that the Colts are going to show up and just make a lot of mistakes, that the adrenaline's going to take over, that they're going to be a little too cocksure of what happened and get pumped up for the Monday Night Football action and then just kind of fall apart?
I mean, I don't, not necessarily in this case. Just I don't think that they were that pumped up off beating Miami, especially with how Miami has looked. And Carson Wentz just prone to making mistakes anyway. So I would expect that you're going to see a pretty rough game out of Carson Wentz tonight. I'm not too worried about it. The other part of this is like Baltimore, it's a kind of a big game for them in a sneaky way. They're sitting here, and if they are able to get the job done, they go to 4-1 in the division, have a full game lead over both the Bengals and the Browns this early in the season. That matters. They haven't played either of them yet. So if they're able to beat them, then you're looking at a two-game lead. And specifically the Browns, I think, are the team that they can hang in there with them. This is a key game for them. They need to take care of business to be able to kind of keep themselves in the driver's seat in the AFC North.
And then just one last time for a guy here, tell the folks about your six-pack and what they can expect to see next weekend as the college football, the NFL action gets coming at us.
Yeah, it's just an article I write every week. It's the six games that I'm going to play. I bet all of these myself, the six games that I'm going to play over the weekend. And they're kind of like the top picks for that weekend. And then there's an honorable mention section that usually has picks as well, which were the other ones that I was considering. And it's been pretty good so far. We went 15-7 heading into this week. So that puts us at 17-11 now. And the honorable mentions are sitting there at what? I think it's like 9-9. They're sitting there at 12-2. So, been a great start to the year. Just have to hopefully get it back next week.
Over racetunes.com/sports, we have you covered for all the insight and pick analysis ideas for how to make the best money along with using the six packs. You've got Papa Dudes covering college and NFL football, free picks for everything. Head over racetunes.com/sports. And one more time, make sure you tune in about half an hour here. Papa Dude and Aaron are going to be talking about the OU Texas game and everything else from the weekend, but really just tune in for that. I don't even care about football that much, and I'm going to tune in for OU Texas. So I'm very excited. Before we get out, I told Nick Feldman I'd bring this back. One more horse racing thing. Althika, we forgot to talk about her. She was a two-time grade one winner in American Turf, and she didn't get the job done in the First Lady. Nick wants to know, was she empty? Was the ride bad? Was it both? What are your thoughts, Mike?
A little bit of everything. I mean, look, her kick wasn't as strong, but there was no pace up front, and she couldn't chase down blowout. So I'm not going to hold that against her. Little bummer she didn't run second. Like, it would have been nice to see her improve a little bit, but she did have some trip trouble. She was weaving through traffic versus just getting her outside in the open, which is what I would be doing every time if I'm on the horse like that. Just don't let them get stopped at any point. Get that momentum rolling. And so, to me, it's one of those situations where she ran into a turf that was a little speed favoring against a lone speed, tight turns at Keeneland. Like, it kind of all went against her. And so I'm not going to hold it against her. I'm hoping this means we get a better price on Breeders' Cup Day.
I'm going to say that the jockey should have probably, in hindsight, tried to get her outside, doing a little more to get her off the rail because she was stuck inside for too long. But he said pretty much everything you said, Mike, is that it was a speed-favoring track. It was there wasn't a lot of pace for her, and it didn't work out with the tight turns. That being said, if we look at a similar situation come Del Mar, it might be something to remember, especially if she draws inside and gets the same jockey. But I think Althika has had a different jockey all three races in America. So I'm pretty sure Appleby will just figure out who's going to give her the best chance in this race. If he puts Pratt on Althika, single.
You're also going to have a lot of European jockeys over for the weekend. So you may see some of the big-time European riders ride her again that have ridden her over there. So you got to think about who's going to be in town. You know, random weekend Keeneland, you're not having a bunch of these international jockeys over there. So you might see Dettori on her. You might see, like, it really will depend who Appleby wants to put on there.
Yeah.
That would be a coveted ride.
Dettori rode all of the Appleby winners at Woodbine that weekend a few weeks ago. She did have a European jockey on. Was it William Buick?
I think Spencer.
Was Spencer in Belmont?
Spencer rode her in New York, yeah. And then I think Velasquez.
Okay. So, I would say she's had it before.
Yeah.
Oh, Velasquez. No, I don't remember. It doesn't matter. We'll talk about it. There's been a lot. There are a lot of races this weekend. We'll be back on Thursday at 5. It's time to get out of here, Mike. We'll be back on 5:30 Eastern, 2:30 Pacific on Wednesday. On Thursday. Make sure you follow us on Twitter to find out if we're coming on Wednesday. I'm at Curtis Kellward. He is at SummerBomb18, number one, number eight, Corporate Overlords, at Racing_Dudes. One last time, tune into the Dudes Who Bet Sports live stream here in 25 minutes. Until Wednesday or Thursday, I'm Magic.
And I'm Mike.
Good luck this week.
The Magic Mike Show, where you hear the experts speak. The Magic Mike Show. Tune into the show every week. The Magic Mike Show. You can trust the show is the bomb, because it's being brought to you by RacingDudes.com.
Death, taxes, and Magic Mike on Monday.